You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Good morning, Tim Neary. How are you this Sunday morning?
I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and have a cat that's busy trying to rip up a book.
Why? Oh, it's a cat. I mean,
no, it doesn't read, obviously, and it's taking its frustrations out.
Well, I mentioned Ugg boots earlier in the show, and my cat, who chews nothing, kills nothing, and is interested in nothing, has a fury every time he sees the fur top. And in fact, I'll tweet a picture of where he has ripped it so horrendously that there's giant holes now. The minute he sees them, he spits at them and then leaps on them as though they're going to hurt him.
On the top of a camera, when you're doing wildlife filming, etc., you know, you've got the fluffy that takes the air out of your sounds and protects the microphone.
Yes.
Those are very expensive, and it's amazing the amount of wildlife. They hone in on them and kill them.
I think they have a fight with us and technology, and also they just want us to know they're around.
I was having a good smile at your car issue. My 1947 matchless motorcycle does 85 miles to the gallon, and to set the timing, I use a tape measure and a piece of dowel. My BMW GS, well, that I need a computer to set the timing.
Sounds about right. Tim, talk to me about penguins.
Yeah, the poor old happy feet. They're not really very happy, are they? Sam, going back, of course, penguins are the first conservation law ever passed in the country, and that was that no man should eat more than half a penguin a day. And that was in 1654, and you'll find it in a book called The Conservationists and the Killers. But penguins have gone from millions in our area to the jackasses must be sitting at about 25,000 breeding pairs over the coastline between Namibia and Algoa Bay. So they've taken a huge dive, and the question is, are they able to come back, and what's caused it? And, of course, the 25th was International Penguin Day, which disappeared a little bit more quietly than World Planet Day or whatever they called it. But it's interesting to see that the things that have hammered the old penguin. Egg collection, for example. Delicacy all over the world. So at one stage, we were collecting about 13 million penguin eggs a year. Simply, the penguins couldn't recover from that little one.
No.
And, of course, the penguin is also a wonderful fuel source. So while everybody was melting down large bits of whale blubber in big vats, they used penguins as the fuel source because being fat and tubby and full of oil, the penguin burnt for a long time. So that didn't help the poor guy's little cause in life. I mean, in 1960 or so, we had the major fish stock collapse, which also didn't help. And then 1967, the oil that arrived with the closing of the Suez Canal and the big tankers going around our coastline, and that started to hammer them a little bit more. And then we've had two or three really bad shipwrecks as well, the Treasure being one of them, which also was really sort of hammered the poor old penguin badly. So the poor guy is really into a bit of a bad point.
It is quite a bad point. And is there any way of turning it around?
I guess there is, within reason, because it's the fish stocks are one of the areas. They are looking at seeing, is it possible to get the penguins to live where there are more fish, and will they change their diet? But I would think that the penguin is mostly going to go along happily and end up very much like the vulture, reliant on man for for vulture restaurants, and just persecuted continuously. And penguins, of course, it's also those odd things you've got. Stony Point down in Cape Town where the penguins breed, problems with people's dogs attacking them. They don't want them in their gardens because they're smelly. And then we also made a muck of their burrowing system because they're burrow breeders. So along came the guano, the white gold, and that hammered the penguins even harder. So places like Bird Island in Port Elizabeth, which had possibly a good 10-plus meters of guano on it, and the penguins could burrow away into it. Now, of course, when it rains and the seas are heavy, it floods their burrows. But, yeah, I'm sure that if man put his mind to it correctly, we'd recover it in some way. But, you know, can we recover it fully? That I wouldn't think we can.
And you say here, we love our gardens in the day, we appreciate the birds and butterflies, but what's happening during the night?
Yeah, outside my study, I've got a Giranta. And at any given time, there are good 10-plus butterflies on it. But the carpenter bees love it, etc. And I thought the other night I was outside walking around, and I just had a look at the Giranta, and it was a mass of moths. So I started to look at the rest of the garden. And yes, we hear the odd sort of bugs and beetles at night chirping away happily, but boy, is the garden busy at night. And you go and have a look at that Giranta, and there are a variety of different insects that come out at night, and they do exactly the same as the day. They are pollinating, they are they're grabbing the nectar for their own use, etc. So your garden at night doesn't go to sleep like you do. It's a very, very busy place.
Tim, thank you very much indeed. Tim Neary, and we'll chat to him again next week. I have a hippo story I want him to do some digging on. So thank you very much, Tim Neary, with our Nature Diary. You don't know. I'll tell you about it next week.